Countdown rolls on a Thursday afternoon at 3:31. Live at Seasons Main Street, Bangor, Rich Kimble with Ryan Waning. And on the G&M Family Market phone line, we're joined by Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Mr. Ryan, good afternoon. Welcome to fall. I trust your equinox went well this morning.
Yeah, it did. It's a gorgeous day here. Perfect idea of what fall ought to be like all the time. It's wonderful here.
Great time of year, and maybe even better when the Red Sox are playing well, and we know or are pretty sure they'll be playing some October baseball. This has turned into a pretty interesting team over the last week and a half after an up-and-down season, showing the signs of being one of those special teams, I think.
Well, they have right now everything going for them, including luck, because if you saw the game last night and you know how that sixth inning went and you know it should have been over with them still losing 1-0, and instead, in a matter of a minute and a half, they went from down 1-0 to up 5-1, and they won the game. That just illustrates when you're hot kind of thing. But they deserve it. The way they played, they've done everything well. They pitched well. Obviously, the pitching has settled in. We had all the huge questions about the bullpen in the middle of the season. We had questions about the starters, and now they seem to have a decent rotation. More importantly, Rich, a playoff rotation. You don't need five guys in a playoff. So we don't care if Pomeranz throws another pitch. Doesn't matter. He's not going to be a factor in the postseason. So don't have to worry about that. And you don't even have to worry about Wright. You got three starters. That's all you need. It's nice to have another one, but you don't need another one. So if you got three starters, you got four guys for three spots, that's a good shape.
Who would you go with in that number three? Would you wait and see how the matchups went, lefty-righty?
Yeah, I think I'm still exasperated by the trends of Buchholz. I kiddingly wrote and said this middle of the season, he's out of the will. That's it. It's over. He's not getting back in the will. He's out. It's done. And, now he's pitching as if he wants to get back in the will. But do you really trust him yet? And on the other hand, Rodriguez has not earned our full trust either. But you like what you see of him when things are going well, and it's always nice to have a lefty. And the fact that he is left-handed, I wonder, will that play into any decision that Farrell has to make in that regard?
As you look at this team and the terrific offensive year they've had by so many players, it would be tough. But who would you pick as your MVP of this group?
I would pick Betts as the best player. I know Poppy's emotionally the guy, and Poppy's had an amazingly productive year in his farewell year. But I'd go with the two-way player. I am not a fan of, nor do I believe in, or would I ordinarily espouse defensive statistics. I'm still a bigger fan of the eye test when it comes to defense. But I must point out, those of you stat guys out there, that I just got through reading yesterday that indeed Mookie Betts is a premier right fielder by the numbers and has saved more runs, if you believe in that stuff, than anybody in baseball, so at least in right field. So we know what he does at the bat, and we know how productive he's been. And we also know he can run the bases. I'm starting to sound like my boy Hubie now. More important, so I think you throw the three things together, the bat, the glove, and the legs, and he's your best player and your most deserving as MVP.
Now, Bob, you recently wrote, and I thought it was great, you wrote about the MVP award and the fact that people have this all wrong. It is a Player of the Year award, and that we're putting too much emphasis on that word valuable.
Well, for me it is, and I think it was intended that way, though I can't prove it since I wasn't in the room in 1931 when the BBWAA created this particular version of an outstanding or best or valuable player. There have been such things going back into the early part of the century. Most famously, 1910, there was a huge squabble about that. But since they did it in 31, now they have given it to guys that you'd have to say that someone must have thought he was valuable, quote-unquote, as opposed to the best player. And people have voted for people like that, and people have even won it on that basis. But I don't think that's the way it should be. The primary reason is this. It's a matter of semantics. It's a matter of job description. Let's say that you're on a real good team, and there's a number of good players, but if any one of them isn't there, they still can function because of the backups, because of the depth. Or let's say that behind your position, there happens to be a quality backup, and they could actually get by without you to a large degree, 80 or 90% as well as good or, as they were without you, with you, I mean. Well, you're not the GM. This isn't a GM award. This is a production award, a talent award. So a player is a player, not a GM. So you're not, you shouldn't be penalized because they can replace you. But people look at this. If they took so-and-so off the team, where would they be? Rich, you can say that about every single team, including the worst team in baseball, that they would be even worse without their best player, theoretically. That's not. That's just so specious. It's so ridiculous to me to say that when you can say that about so many people. So let's just get back to the basics and pick the best player. Now, if that means that Mike Trout should win it every year, as Michael Jordan should have won it like 8 or 10 times, so be it. Let somebody beat him out. Right now, Mike Trout may still be the best player in the league, but right now the second best player in the league, based on what he's done this year, is clearly Mookie Betts, and I think that he's got a real shot at this award.
And when it comes to the Cy Young, you would be a pretty firm believer that that's intended for a starting pitcher, and that's why they have the Fireman of the Year award.
Well, the thing was instituted in 1956, and now I know it's a different world. I understand that. That's the argument I would listen to if you want to make it. I'll listen to it. Doesn't mean I'll agree with you. But if you want to say, look, the world has changed, it's not the way it was in 1956, it's a bullpen world, we give you the world champion Kansas City Royals. Okay, fine. And look how they're built. Okay, fine. Yes, it is a different world. Regardless, if you want to take that and extrapolate that into the Cy Young, you're welcome to it. I won't do that. That award was instituted. It's named after a man who won 511 games, not saved 234. And it has nothing to do with closers and its original incarnation. And it shouldn't have anything to do with closers. It should have only to do with starting pitchers. Give the closers their own award. I used to say call it the Hoyt Wilhelm Award. If you want to call it the Mariano Rivera Award, that's perfectly okay with me. And by the way, it wouldn't necessarily be the guy with the most saves, because saves are a very, it's an agent stat. And it was created out of a mandate by Jerome Holtzman, a writer, who could have said it, could have written it differently, but he wrote it the way he wrote it, and that's the way it's been. And now it's managed that way. Oh, we can't put them in because they're up by four. We won't get a save. And how stupid is that? Well, that's where we are. So let them have their own award.
We're talking with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Bob, you've said before that your best baseball experience and memories come, like many of us, from that 1967 Red Sox season, the impossible dream year, and so many great guys that year, but a team that was really carried all season long by a Triple Crown performance from Carl Yastrzemski. Who's the equivalent? Is there a Yaz on this version of the Red Sox?
Well, that was very special, and one of the reasons... Everything came out of nowhere that year, you know, even though you look back and you realize that they were good in the second half of the 66 season, and they actually, I think, played 500 ball after the All-Star break. But nonetheless, no one was picking them to do a whole lot that year. And Yaz had transformed himself from a singles and doubles hitter who had won a couple of batting titles, and also an attitude thing that people thought he had, into a leader. And he made himself into a power hitter by going in the offseason and working with a guy named Gene Birdie at the Colonial Country Club in Linfield, Mass. Transformed his body, became more of a power hitter by trying to be one, by looking for pitches in certain zones to drive the ball, and he did that to the tune of 44 homers. But then, of course, he was always a Gold Glove outfielder, and it seemed that every big play he was making, throwing guys out, including the last day of the season when he threw Allison out of the second to end the eighth inning, so on and so forth. Guys have had years of tremendous years, but I don't know that any. And the numbers, you know, there have been better numbers. 326, 44, 126, I believe they were. We've had higher numbers, but the impact of him day in, day out was extraordinary. Then, of course, Rich, the thing that made him special was he hit 500 the last 2 weeks of the year. He went 7-for-8 the last 2 days of the year. He went 4-for-4 on Sunday, and he drove in the go-ahead runs in the 5-run sixth inning on the day they won the pennant. Then he had a great World Series, but, of course, that was. After the fact.
I want to ask you about this because there have been a lot of conversations in the last week or so about Bill Belichick and his ongoing relationship with the media, which is an interesting one. In your time covering Boston sports, is there another manager or coach that approached that relationship that Belichick has? Would it be a Red Auerbach, perhaps?
I'm going to I didn't cover Red as a coach. Red was retired 3-4 years before I came along. I got to know Red quite well and his other guys and you know, had some ups and downs over years, and then in the end, nothing but ups. The only guy that I'm going to throw out there that I think might remotely qualify to this degree, and once again, I don't know all the hockey coaches. I didn't deal with all the football coaches. And that would be Bep Gwidlin. My first encounter with Bep Gwidlin was a little bit of an intimidating one, and I suspect that he could be that way with other people as well. But other than Beth Gwidlin, and that's probably the AAA version of Belichick in this regard, Belichick stands alone. But, you know, we should know better by now. We expect nothing. Expect it. Roll with the punch. And I think the writers do. Belichick overreacted 2 days ago. I'm not sure why. I don't know. Maybe it's because of who asked the question. I don't know who asked what question. I don't know who. But maybe that was it. I don't know. But of course he overreacted. But you know what? No, we shouldn't overreact to the overreaction, because after 15 years, we ought to know what's coming.
Exactly. Hey, Bob, before we let you go, now we've talked with you about music. We've talked with you about theater. But we've never talked movies. I wondered, what's your favorite movie of all time, Bob?
Well, it is such a cliche, Rich. It's such an easy answer for me. But it's the truth. You know, the truth is the truth. My favorite movie that I could watch monthly, if not weekly, is Casablanca. I love it. And I love the number of great lines and the wonderfully drawn characters. The supporting cast is so phenomenal. Peter Lorre, Sidney Greenstreet. Oh, come on. The guy Carl that played the guy that played Carl the waiter. I mean, on and on. It's just, and of course, Claude Rains. I just love it. And, you know, now you get to and then all the romantic aspect of it with Bogey and McCall. And when you read up on it and you find out how close that came to not being Bogey and McCall, that it could have been Ronald Reagan and Ann Sheridan. Mm. That was the first thought. Then when you read up on it and find out that nobody thought anything special, it was just another backlot movie at Warner Brothers, just rolled off the presses. Nobody thought there was anything unusual or odd or wonderful or great or special or lasting or classic, or that you and I would be talking about this movie 73 years later. No one thought that. They just rolled it off, and it turns out to be my favorite movie, and I think and many other people of all time.
Beginning of a Beautiful Friendship. You can't go wrong with that one.
No, you can't.
All right, Bob, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for making time for us this afternoon. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Very good. Lots to talk about these days. So
Absolutely.
long.
Absolutely. Thank you.